Well, hello, podcast people. I was just telling Patrick that I have prepared for this podcast by going through a week of intense anxiety and chastising myself over the majority of my life decisions, so I feel like I am ready to go. Podcasting, I've started to do a little bit more advertising, or tried to. I had a friend call me and say that, Dave, on your Instagram, you have to be like, I have a podcast and this is how you listen to your podcast. This is super important. And so I started making some more crafty Instagram posts about me having a podcast, and they resulted in zero views. You know, but it's my own fault. I mean, I took like that 2 month break, definitely didn't help. That consistency has got to be there to make it happen. I mean, my tried and true listeners are still there. And also, speaking of creativity, I actually was fascinated by this story that I read on ESPN today and then saw a little bit of. There was a man born with no arms and no legs, became a football coach by playing football video games with his chin. Can you believe this, Patrick? Football video games with his chin. He learned so much about football that he became a football coach. And then he said, I hate asking for help. And I was like, Jesus Christ, man. If a guy, that just doesn't say a lot about masculinity, that you could have no arms and no legs and still not want to ask for help. So I do want to ask for help from you, the people who like my podcast and who I love so deeply. You know, you could become my first patron on Patreon for $1 a month. You know, that's a possibility. I'm not actively fundraising yet, which I will start. I'm actively helping a friend of mine fundraise for his political nonprofit as kind of a warm-up to start doing my own fundraising. And he and I both talking about the difficulties of fundraising for yourself is helping. You can like my Facebook, like the Dave Good Show on Facebook. You can follow the Dave Good Show on Instagram, follow the Dave Good Show on Twitter, you know. And I could use some kind of tech internet help, like to organize my site better, I'll be doing some of this myself this week to get it onto all the podcast apps and help with the flow. But if you like the podcast and want to help, I will pay you in, you know, booze or tacos or pizza for your assistance. But, in terms of the bigger picture, getting projects off the ground, you know, you just want to bring in as many people as you can. And I did, you know, I did have this thing where I met a younger person who produced her own work, and I'm getting kind of excited. I think I'm going to try to build an army of 20-somethings to help the Dave Good Show. I mean, they haven't been crushed by society yet. And honestly, I'm closer to 20 than I am to 40 emotionally. And so, and then I was like, oh man, the thing about bringing people in, it's like, why do I call it the Dave Good Show? Like, why don't I call it something else? Because it's easier to bring people in, you know, like, why don't you become a part of whatever, Valhalla? You know, don't you want to join Valhalla? Like, that's like a group thing. But I called the Dave Good Show for a reason. And I actually, oh man, it's funny. I thought I had a note about this, but I didn't make a note about this. I watched this documentary called Wild Wild Country, which is about the attempted creation of a utopia. And I love things about attempting to create utopias, because the Dave Good Show is a utopia that I'm trying to create, and it's kind of impossible to do it. I think the best you can have is a short-lived, benevolent dictatorship, and that's really more what I'm trying to build. And that's why I call it the Dave Good Show, because I don't want there to ever be any question as to who is in charge, right? And that's like a way that I protect it. It's a way that I protect the vision. It makes it a harder hurdle to climb from the beginning, because I'm like, hey, would you help me with the Dave Good Show? But I'm making it clear that it is my show and that I can maintain control over that show. And the reason that I can maintain control of the show is that I've already thrown the Ring of Power into Mordor, you know, like I've already passed the test. And so there's some stuff about creativity and podcasting. I do like this format. And then some other just general observations. So I feel like I've covered my privilege enough. Like, I'm going to get deep into the LA story, and I feel like I've made it clear. Like, I had retirement savings and loans from family. That's how I made it happen. Like, you know, it was like a 2-year ride of producing my own work. And I don't want to constantly keep referencing where did I get $100 to buy groceries. You know, I also sold some things, and that will come up. But, you know, I feel like I've addressed it. And there's going to be no stories of me. There's no story that starts, well, I sat down for a steak dinner at a fancy LA restaurant. I don't have any of those stories. I have a lot of stories about making soup, you know? I mean, I use my privilege to make this journey happen, and I don't want to continually talk about it because, look, I've said this before, but most people I know who grew up with privilege, all they did was use that privilege to create more privilege, you know? And I'm trying to distribute my privilege into the world while maintaining enough of it to survive and, you know, achieve my goal of making $62,000 a year, the median household income. And so, anyways, I'm going to quit doing that. I meant to say that previously. I mean, that's also the same, like, I'm going to quit telling people how old I am. That's not doing me any good, you know? And I'm thinking about buying some kind of masculine concealer to cover my face blemishes. That's another thought I've had recently. Because, anyways, and so, oh yeah, and the dating thing. Like, I don't know how much I want to talk about that, but I did talk to a friend of mine who's in an open marriage about my love life troubles, and it gave me some clarity. Like, he and his wife, it's like, it's not like they each sleep with whoever they want. It's like a negotiation. Ideally, they find a lady for both of them to sleep with. That's like the ideal situation. And I kind of told him like how long I had gone without an intimate encounter, and he was like, he compared it to starvation, you know? I was like, I don't feel that bad about having not gone this long without an intimate encounter because I've had, you know, plenty of them in my life, you know? Like, I mean, shit, I mean, what do you think about the guy with no arms and no legs? What's his fucking dating life gone, you know? Compared to him, I'm like 12,000 Hugh Hefners, you know? And it was just kind of funny. Like, I don't think I'm gonna die, you know? Like, I will not die. And also, a part of this is my own fault. I mean this in the best way. Like, I'm trying to evolve and reject patriarchy, you know? I feel like the role in this world that I've been given is like the, you know, the booty call, or like, you know, maybe there's like an attractive married lady who's exhausted by her ultra conservative husband and she needs someone to sleep with to give her the courage to leave that relationship. Like, that's very much the role that I have been cast in, you know, but I have decided I don't want to play that role, at least for now. And so, I mean, I've got some responsibility in that department. And also, I know that I haven't dated an alcoholic or a mean lady in this time, and I have that problem. You know, I'll be at a bar with a female friend, I'll be like, oh, hey, I think I'm attracted to that lady over there. And she'll be like, Dave, she's a ruthlessly mean alcoholic, you know, like, so trying to celebrate my progress in that department, just, you know, take responsibility for it. Like, I have enough social skills that if I wanted to go and, you know, just whatever, get myself laid in the most basic sense, I could do that. And so I'm just going to try to complain about it less. I mean, fucking February 15th is my favorite day of the year. The day after Halloween is like my second favorite day, but February 15th, when all of the holidays are over, is just the best fucking day. It is the best day you know, it's the best day. And it's been beautiful here in Minnesota. It's been like 18 degrees and cloudy without any snow on the roads, which is like a miracle. So, and I mean, also that my lifestyle as it's set, because I have this job that I like, and I'm almost to the point where I'm going to have a job that's 35 hours a week with health insurance that doesn't crush my soul, which is the dream of any artist, you know, but the rub is it's a day job, you know? And so that means I am face to face. It's a Monday through Friday day job. And that means I'm face to face with breeder life all the time. That means I'm at the grocery store with the families and the kids. That means I see the school buses. That means, you know, all this stuff. Like, it's kind of easier for me to operate when I work nights and weekends, because then I'm not constantly seeing this world that I'm not a part of, you know? And even though I've chosen to not be a part of it to a certain extent, to some extent, to maybe a greater extent, this life chose me, you know? But so I think a part of my constant heartache is because I'm face to face with breeders like all the time. And I, you know, just trying to be more aware of that, you know? And then, the last observational thing I've talked about is that I got Netflix and Hulu because I wanted to watch both of the Fire documentaries. I mean, as a potential festival producer, I felt like it was imperative for me to see those things. And then also I could finally see the things that people had always been upset with me for not seeing, you know? And I think maybe that's my strategy. I'll just get a streaming service every now and again so I can, you know, I want to be a part, I'm not a part of breeder culture, but I want to be a part of something, you know, and like watching the Fire documentaries made me a part of something. And so I watched Rick and Morty. Patrick, have you seen Rick and Morty?
I have not.
Oh man, has someone asked you if you've seen Rick and Morty?
No.
Oh, well, allow me to do that. It's a sci-fi cartoon that a lot of dudes like. People always ask me if I like Rick and Morty. And honestly, I found it to, it's a very smart show. It's very smart. It's very white dude, atheist, smart sci-fi show. And that's also kind of why I don't like it, but it's fascinating. And it is just like so incredibly white dude smart that I had to look up the people who created the show. And one of the guys who I don't remember, I read his Wikipedia page, right? And one thing that was interesting, and Patrick will find this interesting, is that he bases every episode off of Joseph Campbell's understanding of myth. And he created this thing called the story circle. And he's like, I see it everywhere. I can't not see it. And it's like, character is content. Character has a problem. Character enters a new environment. Character faces challenges, overcomes challenges, is changed, returns to comfortability, something like that. It's pretty fascinating. You know, and then he also said something about TV versus movies that I thought was really interesting, which is that movies are designed for you to feel something powerful, generally fantastic, at the end of the movie. Whereas TV is designed to keep you watching TV forever. And that really hit home with me. And like, that's what was so great about not having streaming services and just watching DVDs, is that I was watching things that were designed to make me feel great when they were over. And then like, every time I finish an episode of Rick and Morty, I'm like, oh, I need another episode of Rick and Morty. You know, like, I don't feel totally right. But anyways, it's great. They're only 22 minutes. I'm going to watch all of them. And then I never have to have another person say, oh my God, why haven't you seen Rick and Morty? And I'll be released from that. So there we go. There's some stuff about podcasts. There's some observational stuff. Knocked out in a mere, oh, don't get too close to the mic, Dave. Knocked out in a mere 16 minutes. And now, at long last, let's return to the saga. The saga that is my life of moving to Los Angeles and becoming, you know? So, okay, where were we? I have moved in to this house of stand-up comedians. I've been stripped of my privileges, stripped of my career. My medallions have been unceremoniously removed. My bars have been ripped off my shoulders. And I've been told that I'm moving into a furnished room in a 5-bedroom back house of stand-up comedians. And so I get there, and right away, my room, Patrick, is not furnished. There's nothing on the ground. It's not even the room that I thought it was going to be, but it's like a different room. And the reason that I've been given this room is clearly I seem like the nicest guy. And that's a really LA move, is they try to screw over the nicest guy, because like the least nice guy is going to throw a fit. And because it seemed like I was going to not throw a fit, he's just like, yeah, this is your room. And I was like, no, you showed me this other room with a full size bed and a dresser in it. And he was just like, did I? You know? So, and clearly he was going to be a problem if I insisted on the furnished room. So I was like, whatever, I accept this room. And man, I hate my air mattresses. And I went and I got an air mattress and I threw it on the floor and went to sleep. And then I hadn't had roommates in a very long time. And I remember I walked out into the kitchen to meet my roommates. And it was like the day after the Super Bowl or the week after the Super Bowl. And so the first thing I brought up was the Super Bowl. And the first thing they all said was like, we hate the Super Bowl. Why are you talking about the Super Bowl? I also found out that the oven did not work. And that the clock, like the display, you could see cockroaches climbing up and down inside the display, right? And all of us, the ragtag group of misfits, kind of like we're staring at each other and kind of coming to terms with the situation that we had been put in. I mean, they had all just moved in. Oh, and I need to maybe clarify. When I checked out this place and when it was being shown the display room to convince you to move to this terrible place, I found out that two of the other guys living there were named Dave, right? And I was like, well, fuck, I gotta be the third Dave. You know, this is mystical. So, oh, shit, I don't... Yeah, so there were two other Daves. I guess I could say their names are Dave. I mean, I want to protect the innocent. And so one of the Daves I'll refer to as Juggler Dave. He could juggle 7 things. And the other Dave, I often call him Marine Intelligence Dave because he was in Marine Intelligence. And then Dave had a girlfriend who, I don't know, what's a woman's name, Patrick?
Lisa.
Lisa, great, okay. We'll call her Lisa. Okay. And then there was a giant of a comedian. And what's a man's name?
Ralph.
Awesome. I spent a week of anxiety trying to figure out what these guys' names were, and then just like a beer and a half, and suddenly I got it solved. So there's giant comedian Ralph, there's the two Daves, there's Lisa. And there's an empty room. And we all just kind of know that we're fucked, but also we're all kind of remarkable. At least the Daves are remarkable. And we proceed to start to smoke weed, you know, what you do. And everyone was excited about their readily available weed. And like, I'm not prepared for how strong the weed is. And also just like how tired I am from all of the trauma of LA. And I feel like in my mind, like I smoked a bunch of weed and then I slept for like 2 months, you know? I feel like 2 months of time went by. I don't know how much of time went by, but might have been 2 months. I also definitely got food poisoning somewhere in the middle there. And it's so amazing how much your environment affects you, you know? And because Ralph, I mean, I love Marine Intelligence, Dave, but he was kind of dealing with PTSD, like people who are veterans often do. And Lisa, I love Lisa too. Lisa had her own mental health issues that she was kind of processing. And so did Ralph, you know? I don't think that Juggler Dave was crazy. I think Juggler Dave's this like pretty weird dude. And so anyways, now after 2 months, suddenly like just basic functioning is all that I can do. Like I can leave the house. I can buy groceries. I can make a large one dish meal, you know, and I can think about what the fuck am I going to do to in LA? Like, it's like LA, if you show fear for 1 second, then suddenly it's infinite vastness. Like, the second you lose track of your goals, and immediately the infiniteness of LA just washes over you, and then you're lost in the infinity. And so I remember, like, after, like, cooking my one-dish meal for, like, the fourth week, like, Lisa says, like, Dave, you are so high-functioning. You're making lunch every day. And so around this time is when we realized that there's actually two more people living in the front house, right? So, like, the slumlord, psycho landlord, who's very famous from stealing a lot of money from a famous LA comedy club, right? Has two other people living there, and they are actual living, breathing comedians. One's name is Amber, and one's name is Uncle Mike, right? And Uncle Mike's wife, Myrna. And so we bring Amber and Uncle Mike and Myrna into the fold. And the thing is, like, even as fucked up as we all are, because you got me, like, whatever, failed producer Dave, juggler Dave, marine intelligence Dave, Lisa and Ralph, a giant comedian, we are, like, adorable, you know, and we all start hanging out. And now this is what we're doing. We're just, like, drinking coffee, smoking weed, and talking to Uncle Mike, you know, and Amber. And Uncle Mike and Amber, like, Amber is, like, she's like a 1940s movie star. She's got this, like, hey, see, I'm Amber, I'm beautiful, you know? And Uncle Mike is, like, profoundly hilarious, and it's weird, like, how funny he is. And anyways, we're all, like, hanging out, you know, and we form this weird utopia, you know, like, this strange time. And, like, the thing is that Lisa is from California, and so during this time she has gotten us all, like, mattresses and chairs and stuff from, like, various people that she knows. So I, like, get a twin mattress on the floor, and, you know, she cleans out all the pasta jars and turns them into glasses. So we're, like, drinking out of jars, you know, and, you know, living this, like, subsistence life, you know? I mean, and that's like how, you know, suddenly this, like, existence just spreads over us and spreads over me. And I try to explain that I used to work in fancy museums in Minneapolis, and people are starting to believe that less and less, you know, and we just, it's like the Hotel California, you know. I kind of wonder if I'm ever going to leave. And then I feel like, you know, it's weird. It's like a fireball once again kind of released me from this situation. So we get a fire pit. That's like our thing. And we start having fires outside, you know. And then one day, Ralph, giant comedian Ralph, shows up, and he's brought a bunch of ground beef with him, right? And he appears as we're all in our normal day-to-day routine of drinking caffeine and smoking tons of weed and cigarettes. And he says, hey, if anybody's interested in a barbecue lesson, let me know. I'll be giving one later this afternoon. And in my head, I'm like, I just talked last podcast about Tim, my friend who, like, opened up, you know, like, I've lived with grill masters. I'm from fucking Iowa. Give me a Weber and an aluminum pan of water. I can work some magic for you. And so I'm like, sure, I'll take a grill lesson, you know, high as fuck. Like, show me the grill. And so I go outside, and he's like, put this grate over the fire pit, and he's filled it full of coals, right? And he's formed his hamburger patties, which are like spheres, right? And then he's shaking dry oregano on top of them. And then he's spraying lighter fluid onto the coals. And the thing is, I couldn't have told Ralph that there was something wrong if I wanted to. You know, he was so locked in on giving a barbecue lesson. The thing is, Patrick, you know the difference between a fire pit and a grill? That a fucking fire pit doesn't have holes in the bottom, right? It's just like a pan. And so he fills this thing full of lighter fluid, throws a match in it. It's just like, and a fireball engulfs Ralph's giant head, right? And I'm just like, oh my God. And the fireball dissipates and his like beard and hair is all singed yellow, like in a circle. And he looks at me and he's like, did that look stupid? He either said, did that look stupid or do I look okay? And it's like the funniest fucking thing that I've ever seen in my life. And I recount this story to Uncle Mike, professional comedian, you know. And that's the thing is I'm just like, I don't know. I'm like, maybe I'm going to live there forever. I mean, I know eventually I'll run out of money or what, but I'm just stuck in this place. And then one morning I wake up and I'm drinking my jar of tea and I'm leaning up against, it's like an alley essentially that we live in. I'm leaning up against the wall. And professional comedians, Amber and Mike, pull me aside. And they, like, look at me and they're like, everyone in this house claims to be a comedian. And you're the only one who's funny. What the fuck is the deal, Dave? And they grill me, you know. What are you doing here? Why did you move to L.A.? Why are you funny? Why don't you care that you're funny? Don't you want to be funny? You could be funny. Maybe your job should be funny. Mike's like, do you have any idea how much money I make? This is when I find out Mike is just incredibly cheap. And that's why he's like living in a shared bedroom. And in this house, in this begins my friendship with Amber and Uncle Mike. I mean, my friendship with Amber was short-lived because she was just there for a month to, like, do some auditions. She went back to New York. She was on a show on True TV for a while, like an improv comedy show, you know? She still continues to have her career, and she still looks like a gorgeous 40s movie star. But now, Uncle Mike have kind of, like, and I have, like, kind of locked in and become friends. It's the first time I've really hung out with a professional comedian, like, he immediately started making fun of me for liking Terrence Malick. I don't even tell him that I like Terrence Malick. Patrick, do you know who Terrence Malick is?
Yes, I love him.
Yeah, right? I love him too. He's like, you drink tea from a jar. You like Terrence Malick. Don't you think his movies are a little messy? Don't you find them pretentious? Can you really like Terrence Malick? And like right away, he's making fun of something that like, how dare you make fun of that? And that is, that's a comedian. That's comedy. They, like, find out the one thing that you never expect someone to make fun of you about, and they make fun of you about that thing. You know? Which is super liberating. It's super liberating, you know? I mean, I it's super liberating. It's like I kind of want everyone to hang out with a comedian and have them make fun of their deepest insecurity, and then there's like a release that you get, you know? I mean, feel bad for Uncle Patrick. He has to deal with me. I mean, I've made fun of him about his deepest insecurities, you know, but I've had my deepest insecurities made fun of, and then it's so liberating. You come out on the other side of that. It's like, you're okay. You know, someone has made fun of you for the thing you don't want to be made fun of about, you know, and then like, you're okay, you know? So this is now my life, talking to Uncle Mike, making large things of soup. And Mike and I begin to discuss, like, he is having a similar experience with LA that I have had with LA, where all these people were supposed to help him and they did not help him. I mean, his list is fancier, you know? I mean, like, John Oliver calls Uncle Mike, Uncle Mike, you know? Like, anyone in comedy knows Uncle Mike. I mean, it's a huge part of my anxiety. I'm like, I'm going to be talking about Uncle Mike on this podcast and people know exactly who Uncle Mike is. And Patrick, I call you Uncle Patrick. I've given you a term of whatever, of high distinction. So I realize now that this is what happens in LA. You think all these people are going to help you and they do not help you. And so, and Uncle Mike is used to performing every single night, and he's not performing every single night. He's performed every night for 25 years, and all he has is me. He just has me to tell stories to and make fun of. But man, what a profound privilege it was to be made fun of by Uncle Mike. And you know, at this time I was like, is anything gonna fucking happen? You know, is anything gonna happen? Is anything gonna fucking happen? And I mean, honestly, I believed that nothing would happen, you know? And I think that Uncle Mike did too, you know? And I mean, I'm hanging out with Marine Intelligence Dave and, you know, basking in his genius and the sweetness of Lisa and the absurdity of Dave the Juggler and the unintentional comedy of unfunny comedian Ralph, you know? I mean, it's so good to say this. Like, so many people want to know. Like, I just like, and no one talks about this. No one talks about these times in LA because it is true. I said in the last podcast, like, how hard people work. You know, it's true. And if you are successful in LA, there is a ton of hard work involved, but it's also so easy to get lost, you know? And suddenly just sitting in Dave Town, staring out into the vastness of LA, and, you know, then of course, just when you think nothing is going to happen, something happens, you know? And Uncle Mike gets a call from his friend. Oh, wait. Yeah, I can say it. Uncle Mike gets a call from his friend, Louis Black. You know I'm talking about Louis Black, Patrick? Mm-hmm. And Louis Black has a set at the Improv for a cystic fibrosis fundraiser. And Louis Black wants Uncle Mike to take his spot, right? Louis Black has to go to Jamaica or some shit. He's got to go somewhere. There's some unavoidable conflict that he has. And he wants Uncle Mike to have his headlining set. And Uncle Mike, if you're listening, which I doubt Uncle Mike will listen because, like, he's doing his... He's talking every night, you know? He's got his own talking to do. Not to listen to me. But then it happens, right? Now, Uncle Mike has juice. You know what I'm saying, Patrick? I'm talking about juice. Mm-hmm. He's got the juice. And so he's got the juice. And now, people that he knows want to hang out with him. And his first friend who he knows comes to hang out with him. And this guy, who is also from Canada, wrote a really terrible blockbuster action movie, which I don't want to say because I don't want this guy to know. I don't know. Yeah, okay, he wrote Transformers, right? This is the guy who wrote Transformers. The first Transformers movie comes to see Uncle Mike, right? And so he comes, and he's previously a comedian, and now we're sitting on the porch, hanging out, and I mean, Uncle Mike is including me, you know, in this conversation. And so Uncle Mike says to me, hey, this is my friend, his name I don't remember, he wrote the movie Transformers. And this guy looks at me and I say, I think it's really great that you wrote a movie. Right. I mean, I've already cast my lot as an artist. I'm not going to tell him that I like a movie that I didn't like. And that movie's famously racist. I don't even know if you know about this, but there's like two like not officially black Transformers who like, you know, like there's some... So, and this guy, because he's smart, knows that I didn't tell him I liked his movie and wasn't impressed, and he immediately tells me he's the showrunner on this big-time show and, you know, insinuates I'll never get a job and that I've fucked up and blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, I tell Mike that I'm going to give him a ride so that Mike doesn't drive. Only Myrna drives, but they don't have a car. I don't think they have a car. And so I tell Mike I'll give him a ride. Oh, first I say, I'm like, can I get a ticket to the show? And he's like, you want a ticket to a fundraiser? You want a free ticket to a fucking fundraiser? And I'm like, yeah, I do. I want a free ticket to the fundraiser. And so I end up giving Mike a ride to the show. And it's really kind of funny because I'm giving him a ride to this show. And he can't believe what a good job I'm doing of giving him a ride to the show. Even though I've told him that I've worked jobs giving people rides to shows, you know. But I give him a ride to the show. I take Mike to the world famous Improv. He has a special jacket that he wears that a billionaire gave to him, a show jacket. And I take Mike to the Improv, you know, and I don't even know if it's real, you know? Like, I met this guy in this fucked up comedy ranch. I also call it the comedy ranch of Dave Town. I don't even know this shit is fucking real. here I am at the Improv. I'm seeing all these people. I'm seeing all these comedians that I've seen on TV, like working lesser rooms, hanging out. And then Lewis Black comes on the stage and is like, hey, I know I'm supposed to headline this show, but I can't do it. I have to go. And everybody boos. You know, everybody boos. And he says, you know, I'm not going to bring up a monkey on a bicycle or a unicycle. This isn't a monkey on a unicycle. This is Mike Wilmot, the comedian you've never heard of. He doesn't say that. And he brings up Mike Wilmot into a packed house. This guy that I know from like eating weed chocolate and fucking bowls of soup, drinking tea out of jars, sitting in fucking a random, you know the random collection of outdoor poor people chairs, you know what I'm talking about? Sitting in those kinds of chairs. And out walks Uncle Mike in a billionaire's jacket onto the stage of the fucking Improv. The Improv! Shit I've grown up watching on TV. He's got a 50-minute set. And Uncle Mike kills. He fucking kills. It's the funniest shit I have ever seen. People are rolling in the aisles with laughter. It is ludicrously funny. It's ludicrously funny. I mean, I can't even believe it, you know? He kills at the Improv. And I go outside to smoke a cigarette, and there's a woman outside there, and I start talking to her and telling her about how I met Uncle Mike, you know? And this guy that I was smoking weed with. And then Lewis Black comes outside and he starts smoking a cigarette. Now I'm talking to Uncle Mike and this lady, you know? And I say hi to Lewis Black. Hi, I'm Uncle Mike's roommate. I've been getting him high for a month. And Lewis Black laughs. He laughs. And then it turns out the woman I'm talking to is George Carlin's daughter, Kelly. And she, Uncle Mike comes out and she says, do you guys want to come to a party at my house next week? And we say yes. So yeah, we'll pick up there next time on the way to Kelly Carlin's party.
You've been listening to The Dave Good Show.